You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
Imagine you are being told that there is a job that you are going to take. You will relate to a government that is in trouble, a nation that is unstable, and leaders that are unpredictable. It will be your job to critique and try to inform policy and practice. Yours is a job that is a long-standing part of the tradition, but your role is not appreciated. In fact, it is considered downright annoying at times, and your well-being is often at the whim of the leader. No, I'm not talking about working in Washington, D.C. I'm talking about a scenario that is ancient. For those who were God's prophets to the kingdom of Israel and later the divided kingdoms of Israel and Judah, this was their setting. This was their task. Now, the prophets of ancient Judaism were an interesting bunch. Theirs was this kind of love-hate relationship with the various kings and courts with whom they were attached. Some of their ministries were short-lived. Others observed a number of monarchs at work. The kings were, as you might be aware and remember in your history, they were all over the map when it came to integrity and motivations and their actions. The bad ones, we know, far outnumbered the good ones. And the prophets were their advisors, sometimes prognosticators, but most importantly, they were the social commentators of what was going on around them. They were very much about cause and effect. And in some respects, theirs really was a very simple message. If the nation was righteous, it would receive God's blessing. If not, all bets were off and the outcomes could be positively disastrous. Of course, there are many challenges that we face as modern readers trying to understand all these books of the prophets in our Bible, what these prophecies are about, and to come to an understanding about just who these prophets were. Suffice it to say that there's plenty of debate in theological circles about whether these prophets were actual people and what they really said. But the bottom line is that these are, friends, the texts that we are given. They are what exists, so it's our job to try to make sense of them and how they might go about informing the times in which we live. We do know that much of what was written in these books of the prophets was in hindsight, after the events took place, even though they seem to be foretelling what is to come. And of course, interpretation, when looking back at something, always involves lots of filters. And in the case of ancient Judah and Israel, the bias of the prophets is that the fate of the nation was hinged on the issue of faithfulness. Now, many have felt especially drawn to the texts that are attributed to Jeremiah. And this is probably because a great deal of his humanity is present in these writings. They provided more information about him than just about any other prophet, but it's really not that much when we think of it in terms of a memoir or a biography. And he certainly adds to the message of doom and gloom for the kingdom of Judah. At the same time, we also know that he is a prophet who laments over the way things are turning out. And he is a prophet who ultimately has hope for a future. In other words, even though Judah is going through a world-changing crisis throughout his ministry, it will not be the end of their story, according to Jeremiah. Now, nothing shows that humanness more clearly than the first passage we heard this morning, what we refer to as the call of Jeremiah. Jeremiah was the son of Hilkiah, a Jewish priest from the Benjamite village of Anathoth. And it's important that we understand this backstory because he came from a family who we assume knew something of the history of the relationship between the people and their God. So it seems that having a vision or a word from God was not something that was crazy, but was really something that fits into the context of this story. And in Jeremiah's case, we know that it was going to be one of those, your world is going to be turned upside down kind of messages. Remember those words, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I consecrated you. And I appointed you, to be a prophet to the nations. Okay, so how do you deal with that kind of word from God? What do you do with that? Is there really any choice when a statement like that was made to proclaim anything other than sign me up? Well, I don't think that was initially Jeremiah's reaction. He seemed to keep his composure well enough when the impulse might have been for any of us to scream, hide, run away. Instead, this prophet-elect responded in a way that was another example of this great grand tradition of trying to say no to God, or at the very least to question if perhaps God was making a mistake, possibly talking to the wrong person. Abraham Sarai, after all, laughed in God's face at the thought of having children at their age. Moses wanted to defer to someone else who was a better public speaker because he wanted to be left alone to stay a fugitive in Midian tending his flocks. It was a tradition that would even continue long after the time of Jeremiah. Mary said, after all, wait, how can this be? I cannot have a child. I'm not married. And Paul had to be knocked down and blinded on the Damascus Road in order to get his attention, ultimately causing him to abandon his practice of persecution and rants against the followers of Jesus, becoming a major voice for this new movement. So Jeremiah became a part of that tradition. And he cleverly thought to himself, I think for this response, saying, wait a minute, I'm only a boy. I'm a kid, remember? So how am I supposed to do this job? Now, I suspect he figured that would be more than a good enough retort so that God's mind would be changed and he wouldn't have to join in that long line of prophetic voices. Well, it was a valiant attempt, this retort of, give me a break, I'm just a kid. God would let him off the hook, right? Wrong. God had other ideas. And as we heard in the text this morning, made it quite clear that Jeremiah was stuck telling him, do not say, I am only a boy, for you shall go to all whom I send you, and you shall speak whatever I command you. And do not be afraid of them, for I am with them to deliver you, says the Lord. What a mess. Jeremiah wasn't getting out of this so easily. And if that wasn't enough, Jeremiah was giving an even more challenging task. See, today I appoint you, a boy, over nations and over kingdoms, to pluck up and to pull down, to destroy and overthrow, to build and to plant. Boy, that makes you excited to do that kind of job, right? Well, Jeremiah's chances of leading an unnoticed, quiet life were decreased rapidly. No chance of that. Kind of like the chances yesterday of USC beating Notre Dame. It was just something you didn't want to have to watch, right? Well, this set the stage, friends, for Jeremiah. And throughout his life and his prophetic ministry, he would serve in the courts of five different monarchs. And most of them were a pretty bad bunch, trying to call the people to be faithful, and to point at the horrific results there would be if they abandoned God. And the result of all of this is that he was hated by many, he was jeered at, he was ostracized, he was continually harassed, and more than once, he was almost killed. Wow, that's a job I want. What about you? Well, of course, his message was the one that would certainly spark controversy. After all, how do you respond to statements that insinuated that the people had a short memory of the things that God had done for them, delivering them from enslavement in Egypt, delivering them from the desert that was not fit for anyone to inhabit, leading them to a land with fruit and all kinds of good things. Yet the nation, as we know, was ungrateful. The northern kingdom had worshipped other gods and had lain in ruins. And now the kingdom of Judah, the southern kingdom, which had remained, was not doing much better. They had apparently forgotten about God from top to bottom. That was the setting in which Jeremiah was at work, the setting for his ministry. It was a nation that appeared to be morally bankrupt and in decline, standing at the edge of a cliff. Well, friends, we know that the role of the prophet is never popular. It's never popular to hold up a mirror to a nation so that everything can be seen in clear detail. It's not a pleasant experience. We hardly ever want to do that kind of self-reflection when left to our own devices. And to do it on a grand scale for the nation, well, history has shown us that the human family tends to prefer that the mirror stays foggy rather than expose us in our reality. So time passes on with voices calling out to those who would hear to reshape action and create a new vision for living. But it seems that our human family prefers to more often learn from mistakes. It's those mistakes that's the real rub, because the process never seems to come to an end for us. And calling to accountability those who do not want to be accountable, well, that's one of our human conundrums that we do not seem to be able to extricate ourselves from. But there is much that has changed for modern people of faith, people like you and me who sit in this sanctuary today, who follow Jesus. At least it's changed in some circles. And what I mean by that is our understanding of how God is at work in our midst. The ancients could not remove themselves from the concept that God was the arbitrator of cause and effect. If the people were bad, God punished them. It was not a belief system that was steeped in human autonomy. 2 millennia later, while there are still those who might cling to this belief that God punishes, we're part of a different kind of Christian tradition. A tradition that says, no. We are responsible for our actions. We have free will. And the results of our actions, for good or for bad, are the result of the series of events that they create, and the attitudes that are present within each of us. God does not punish us. Friends, we punish ourselves. You see, we believe that God is the source of love, that God's Spirit is ever working in this world, always at work in this world, so that justice and peace and hope and compassion might be the prevailing forces. It is in that spirit that I believe God continues to call, sometimes prophetic voices in our midst, but calls each of us to this kind of prophetic work. The writer and theologian Frederick Buechner once observed, "The place that God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet." Think about that. The place to which God is calling us is the place where our deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meets. You see, friends, I believe God is calling just as Jeremiah was called, God is calling people to stand up for the hope, to stand up for the forgiveness and the grace that is represented in this task of following Jesus. I believe God is calling to each of us. But the question for each of us is, are we Jeremiah? How are we Jeremiah? What are the excuses that we give to God for why we cannot be part of the hope? What do you think?
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.